No. Don't think. Don't feel. Get up. Get away. Most of the ice around me had thawed. I levered myself up, dripping and shaking. I looked down at my hand. One finger dangled off at a strange angle. Numb horror filled me as I watched bright red blood dripping onto the snowy ground, like the berries that had spilled on the floor of my hut the night the soldiers came. Dizziness hit me, and I stumbled. A figure was moving toward me from a few yards away. Another opponent? But it was inhumanly large, a black shape with pointed shoulders, its edges wavering like sheets of overheated air in the dead of summer. It gained shape as I watched, its arms becoming more defined, long-fingered hands stretching out. I raised my uninjured hand to blast it. But when I blinked, it was only the white-haired announcer, his indigo robe looking out of place among the blood and sweat of the arena. He stopped in the center and addressed the crowd.
"Good people of Tempesia, I present to you the first Fireblood ever to defeat a Frostblood in this arena. A cheer for the Fireblood champion!"
They didn't cheer. A few shrieked and cursed. Arms wheeled back and threw pieces of food and refuse into the ring. Some spectators ran to the edge and spit on the ground. I cradled my injured hand in my good one and limped toward the alcove I had emerged from, still dazed. I hadn't defeated Gravnach with my fire alone. Something else had pulled at my mind and heart. A darkness I'd never known before, though I'd embraced it like an old friend. A stranger in my skin. I found the king's box, my eyes trapped by his. As I watched, his gaze took on a look of calculated interest that made my inside squirm. Morella fairly radiated satisfaction, perhaps even triumph. King Rasmus stood and moved to the railing, his gaze roving over the shocked crowd.
"You've witnessed a great spectacle today, as promised by our dear Lord Albus, peerless officiator of the games."
Weak applause from the crowd.
"But perhaps you are surprised that a Fireblood has won in our city. In the heart of our land. In my arena. Do not be afraid. I assure you, this means nothing. Her power is but a candle in the blizzard, easily snuffed."
A gout of frost burst from his hand, arcing to where I stood. It wrapped around me like cotton batting, layer after layer, until I was surrounded, with barely enough room to breathe. As I wriggled uncomfortably, some of the spectators laughed.
"Rest assured, good people of Fors," said the king, "that frost will always reign supreme. Those who defy us will learn their error and pay with blood and tears."
Numb as I felt, anger heated my skin at his words. His frost was incredibly strong, but with a few streaks of fire, I finally crashed free and turned away, the crowd too wrapped up in their king to care. When I reached the shade of the alcove, a hand on my shoulder made me jump.
"You killed a great champion today, Fireblood," said Bracker. "As a warrior, I salute you."
I cringed away from the praise, shaking off her hand and limping into the shadows of the tunnel. Chapter 21.
"Are you sure those are your orders?" My heart was racing before I consciously understood his words.
Guard's face was stony, his eyes cased so that he wasn't quite looking at me.
"Quite sure. The king has commanded that you down with him."
I was numb, sore, and heartsick after my fight. I hardly remembered who I was, let alone what I was doing in a room in the Frost King's castle, in the same tunic and leggings I had worn in the arena. Something had taken hold of me, and I had taken a life. It was as if I had become someone else entirely, and now I flailed around in my mind, searching for the person I used to be. But at the guard's mention of the king, my purpose came running back to me, erasing the numbness and making my hands tremble. "Destroy the throne. Kill the king. Take your revenge." Finally, seizing control of my battered mind, I nodded and followed the guard into the corridor. He didn't touch me, but stayed close, leading me through a labyrinth of hallways to a large bathing room. Vivid porcelain tiles covered the floors and walls. A fountain burbled in the center. It smelled of rose and lavender and citrus. It would have seemed like a paradise if it weren't for the 5 soldiers lined up along the wall with their soldiers pointed at me.
"Consider this a reward for winning your match," said the guard. "The heat will strengthen you, so we're to kill you if you do anything suspicious. You'll see there's nothing in this room that will burn."
"Aside from you," I corrected.
His head reared back and he blinked. "Our swords will be ready should you try to escape," he said, recovering his steely glare.
If only escape were an option. But the throne was still cursed, and the king still lived, and, most important, my mother was still dead and unavenged. I could no sooner try to escape than I could sprout wings and fly. When they'd gone, a court healer in a white gown entered and sewed up my finger with grim efficiency, then rubbed salve on the cuts on my face. The finger had been cut deeply, but wasn't as bad as I first feared. I waited to make sure the door stayed shut behind her, then discarded my clothes and sank into the steaming water, careful to keep my bandaged hand dry. I tried not to let myself think, but there was too much horror locked inside. I put a hand to my mouth to stifle the sobs and splash my face with water, over and over until my breathing returned to normal. I used my uninjured hand to scrub my hair and skin, then stepped from the tub and wrapped the towel around myself. Down a short tiled hallway was a room not much bigger than a closet, with a large mirror that took up one wall. I dropped my towel and stood in front of the wavy glass. My skin was covered in purple and yellow bruises, but I was no longer the skeleton that had been rescued from the prison. I had developed the gentle swell of muscles in my arms and legs, and the curves of a woman in between. I hadn't looked in a mirror in longer than I could remember. I had the sense that I was a stranger looking at myself from the wrong side of the glass. There was a trunk in the corner that yielded some delicate linens and a corset with bone shaping. I put them on as best I could and found they fit. I was still puzzling over the strangeness of this when a door that was all but invisible in the wall opened. I turned quickly, my fists coming up automatically. Morella stepped into the room, setting a bundle of clothing on a chair and closing the door behind her.
"Always ready to fight, aren't you? You won in the arena, as I knew you would."
I lowered my hands, speechless for several seconds. I could have told her what had happened to me, that something else had taken control of me, but I didn't trust her that far. Not until I knew why she was encouraging me.
"I almost lost," I said. "I was too confident."
Gravenut specialized in playing with his victims like that, which is what made him a favorite. With the crowd or with the king?
Both.
"And you?"
She gave a dismissive shrug. "I watch the matches because I must, not because I care for them. My father would never allow me to stay away. We need to show support for our king."
"And do you support him?"
"How bold you are!" Of course I do. She paused. Except, perhaps, where Fireblood's are concerned. But that remains our secret, doesn't it? I nodded. It was impossible to trust her or anyone in this place, but I couldn't help but be disarmed by her warmth, not to mention her apparent support of my people. Thank you for... I pressed my lips together awkwardly. In the arena, it was good to know that one person wanted me to win. She smiled slightly, her gaze running over the undergarments. It seemed I guessed your size correctly. Shall we dress you? We? You're a lady. What about Darina? I told her I would help you instead. I wanted a chance to chat. Turn around so I can lace your corset. I turned, and she cinched me up snugly. Breathe in, she instructed, pulling the laces tighter. I gasped. Breathing is optional. Looking beautiful is not. She smiled to lighten the words, but I had a feeling she meant them to some degree. She looked incredibly pretty, not a golden hair out of place, the silky strands piled on her head in an elaborate style and fixed with pearl-tipped pins. Her coral satin dress with white lace at the elbows and bodice brought out the peaches and cream quality of her skin. A black velvet ribbon accentuated the slimness of her waist. She turned and picked up the bundle she had brought, shaking it out to reveal a wine-coloured gown embroidered with beaded flowers. She held it open and gestured for me to step in. I shook my head. I'd rather wear the clothes I wore in the arena. That's who I am. This dress is... I've never worn anything that fine. She laughed. Wouldn't that be a sight? The king and his favoured courtiers dining with a girl in bloody rags. I don't think so. Besides, those clothes have either been laundered or thrown away. Step in. She shook the dress impatiently. Given no choice, I stepped into the gown. After she was done fastening the buttons at my back, she took a hairbrush from the box and lifted a section of my hair. Leave it, I said stiffly. It doesn't matter. It matters to me. I can't have my protégé looking like a ragamuffin. Your protégé? I asked, unease sliding through me. The word struck a chord that echoed my time in the abbey. Brother Thistle had said he had once seen me as a tool, a weapon to wield at his choosing. What was I to Morella? She spoke slowly, her attention fixed on my hair, hands carefully smoothing the strands. You are an opportunity. When King Rasmus's mother was killed by a Fireblood, the sentiment toward your people took an extreme turn. When his older brother was assassinated, the animosity turned to hatred. King Rasmus used that to justify his mission to wipe out your people. Anyone who disagreed was banished or killed. No one alive would dare speak out against his campaign against the Firebloods. But you have, she chuckled. I'm no fool. I'd be whisked off to the keep, or worse. She took a section of my hair and twisted it. We all suffer from Rasmus's wild moods and the dangerous decisions that follow, but I haven't been idle. I've made plans and bided my time, waiting for a Fireblood powerful enough to help me carry them out. And here you are. I tried to turn, to meet her eyes, but she held my head between her palms. Stay still. I need to fix the back. What do you want me to do? The words came out more stonily than I'd meant them. Keep winning your matches. Keep Rasmus's eyes on you. Gain his trust and you'll find yourself with more freedom in the castle, which will benefit both of us. And why should I trust you? Because I'm the only person here,
and perhaps in the entire kingdom, who doesn't want you dead? I shook my head, just a tiny movement, without thinking. I saw her face change in the mirror. Someone else wants you alive too, then. The monks you lived with? Whoever helped you escape the prison? I pressed my lips together. The young man, she said softly. I felt my eyes flare wide before I hid my surprise. Her reflection smiled at mine. My father tells me everything. I know about the monks, but I think perhaps the hooded young man is a sweetheart. What's his name? I stared forward resolutely, but I couldn't help thinking of Arcus. I longed to know he was safe, and wished for the 100th time he was with me, protecting and guiding me as planned. Tell me one day, Morella said with perfect confidence. And to gain some good faith, I'll tell you something first. I was once betrothed to the king. My eyes met hers in the mirror. You and King Rasmus. She shook her head, picking up a small container, rubbing her finger in the bright rouge it contained before adding some to my cheek. She frowned, then grabbed a cloth to wipe it away. You don't need rouge. Your skin is naturally flushed. How lovely. Your betrothal? I prompted. I was to marry his brother, King Aurelius. It was a match arranged by our fathers when we were very young. We grew up knowing we would wed some day. When King Akur died and Aurelius was crowned king, the wedding date was set. A king needs a strong queen in our tradition. He is the source of power. She is the bridge between the king and his people. Also, my father always tells me. In any case, before the wedding could take place, Aurelius was assassinated. I'm sorry, I said sincerely, knowing what she didn't say, that it was a fireblood who'd murdered him. It was a wonder she didn't hate me along with the rest of them. Did your father arrange another betrothal? Her lips tilted in a self-deprecating smile. He's tried, but King Rasmus insists he will choose his own bride when he's ready. My father has tried to foist me on him so many times Rasmus can barely stand the sight of me. Luckily, our family ranks highly in Frostblood nobility, with a multitude of connections and allies, so the king doesn't dare cause offence. That's why I accompany him during formal occasions, such as the arena fights. A placeholder for the queen who will one day sit at his side. But if your family is that important, why can't you stand up to the king? Or organize some resistance against him? Careful, she said softly. The walls may be stone, but they are paper thin when it comes to treason. And the king is far more powerful than you realize. Only because of the throne. Her eyes flared with surprise and a hint of satisfaction, holding mine for a moment before she looked away. When she had covered my face with a dusting of powder, she nodded in approval and motioned me to stand before the full-length mirror. The gown was full-skirted and magnificent. It set off the flush that had bloomed on my cheeks and warmed my amber eyes to burnished gold. It was the finest thing I'd ever worn. I hated it, and this stranger in the mirror. This wasn't part of the plan. Is it really necessary to fancy me up like a visiting princess? I tried to yank the bodice higher. The king is likely to kill me over dinner. He won't kill you. You're one of his champions now. Prove to him that you're worthy of the name. Don't show weakness, and don't let your temper run away with you. He wants to watch you in the arena again. I could tell. My stomach turned at the idea that he had been pleased at making me into a murderer. But if playing his brutal games was the only way to stay alive and have a chance at destroying the throne, I would do it. Before she left, Mirella warned me not to tell anyone about our chat. I wondered at her trust in me. But then again, she knew I had no reason to betray her. I'd be a fool to lose my only ally. And I couldn't help but admire her bold honesty. I even liked her a little. Still, she reminded me of something I'd seen in Mother's book of exotic flora. A beautiful flower, harmless if you leave the petals alone, but deadly if disturbed. She kept her secrets tightly furled inside, but when she bloomed, what sweet-smelling poison would be released? A few minutes later, I was escorted by two guards down a series of hallways. My heart thumped in my ears as we came to a set of huge double doors, carved with two dragons facing each other and clutching ice arrows in their talons. White-gloved servants pulled the shiny handles, and a blast of glacial air burst from the opening doors. The room was vast and intensely cold, with frost-bitten walls and a few tapestries woven in cool, muffled tones. The floor tiles were glassy blue and shining white. Candles shivered in sconces on the walls. From the vaulted ceiling, a crystal chandelier laden with icicles threw prismatic slivers of colour over the room. In the centre was a table made of sharply cut glass and clear chairs covered in white animal skins. Several of the seats were occupied by elegant ladies in bright dresses and men in sombre vests. The hum of conversation died as their eyes fixed on me. I swallowed and forced my slipper-clad feet slowly toward the table. A tall figure with pale hair stood, and the rest of the men followed suit. He gestured to a chair, not at the far end of the table as I'd hoped, but at his right hand. At the sight of the king, my muscles clenched, ready to defend myself, ready to fight. The cold intensified as I neared him, swirling in unseen currents that brushed against my neck, my face, and the exposed skin above the collar of the dress. It wasn't so much a breeze as a sensation of his power making itself known, testing my heat. I kept my face blank, determined not to show the slightest bit of weakness, but it was like walking in a blizzard. By the time I had reached the seat, my breathing had quickened. I put my hand to the table for support and drew it back quickly. The table wasn't glass, but a slab of clear ice. I smoothed my skirt and sat on the soft white fur of the chair, my hands trembling with fear I couldn't quite master. No animal skin covered the king's chair, as if he reveled in the cold. The table was set with silver plates, goblets, and cutlery on white napkins. My plate reflected the crystals that hung over my head like tiny swords about to fall. Chin held high, I glanced around the table. A few people looked away, while others stared openly.
"You must forgive my guests for staring," said the king. "You are somewhat of a curiosity, the first Fireblood champion."
Their attention locked onto me as they waited for my reply. I didn't know what to say, so I stayed silent.
"A laudable achievement," said one of the men, drawing my eye. He was middle-aged, with thick sideburns and heavy features, his eyes assessing.
"Though I would never cheer for you openly in the arena, let me congratulate you now. No doubt it will be my only opportunity to do so."
He smiled, though it didn't reach his eyes.
"Don't dismiss us so easily, Lord Blanding," said another voice.
Recognition speared through me in a sharp jolt. I had been too nervous to look closely at each guest, and he looked so different out of his uniform. A tailored blue velvet jacket over a stiffly starched white shirt, his dark blonde hair carefully swept back from his forehead.
"She set fire to half my regiment and escaped from Black Creek Prison. She's wily, this one. It took months to find her."
My gaze swung to the king. He returned the look, his cold, dark eyes ringed with blue, as desolate as a glacier on a frozen sea. Of all the cruelties I'd endured, eating dinner with the captain who killed my mother was the worst. If I could have killed him with a glance, I would have roasted him, both of them. The king's face was impassive, but his eyes took on a hint of cold enjoyment as he spoke.
Indeed. And now you have brought her to us. Though I admit I'm not happy at losing the mountain beast and my favourite champion, I expect she will yield all manner of entertainment as compensation.
Before I could respond, the doors opened and Morella sailed in, resplendent in bronze silk edged with delicate tea-dyed lace. Her smile swept the room as the men stood. She found her seat across from me and settled in. Am I late again? I can never remember what time we dine. The king sent her a cool, half-lidded glance. A man in dark green robes to Morella's left, Lord Eustavius, admonished her.
Perhaps if you slept during the night and rose in the morning as most people do, he said, your clock would align with the rest of the world.
But that would hinder my stargazing, wouldn't it, Father? And we both know the answers to all our questions lie in the stars.
If you spent even a fraction of your time in society instead of that blasted observatory, you'd have found a husband by now.
Annoyance flared in her eyes. But a husband would never allow me to pursue my passion for knowledge as you do. Better I remain unmarried.
I'm not sure how much longer I'll allow it. I may decide to give you a deadline. Something along the lines of, he waved a hand, marry by winter solstice or I'll send you to the Silent Sisters on Nimbus Island.
Her lip curled, a flash of something almost violent darkening her eyes. The Silent Sisters are part of the Order of Cirrus, she said in a low voice. I would sooner throw myself off the eastern cliffs. The table went silent. My only thought was gratitude that Morella had drawn all attention away from me. Her father patted her hand, clearly ruffled.
I only jest, my daughter. I'm sure you'll find someone from Forja to marry.
She sat back in her chair and took a sip from her goblet, clearly trying to regain control. I'm sure you're right. I'll give my hand to someone in his dotage who sleeps half the day, as I do. Or perhaps a man who enjoys gambling and brothels so much that he doesn't care how I spend my time. A laugh split the shocked silence. The captain leaned forward with a rakish grin, his heated gaze sweeping over Morella, lingering on her bosom.
I enjoy gambling and brothels.
Morella smiled back, displaying a charming dimple.
Aren't you already married, Captain Drake?
That I am, he practically leered at her. My wife is very understanding.
His lips took on a mocking twist.
My daughter, however, gives me no peace. She would sooner see me hanged than wrong her mother.
As it should be, Morella said. My fingernails bit into my palms. So he had a wife and daughter. I wondered how he would feel to watch one of them die before his eyes. I struggled to keep my face from showing my hatred. The captain's expression turned mocking as he regarded Morella.
Lately she insists I leave most of my money with her. She's too smart. I miss the days when all I had to do to gain her approval was bring her a doll from one of my campaigns.
How old is she now?
Asked a woman sitting across from Lord Blanding.
12, but she may as well be 50 for all the nagging she gives me. She'll make someone a strong wife some day. Not that anyone is good enough for her.
The table seemed to relax as the conversation moved to the children of various noblemen and women. Morella looked on with a half-mocking smile, inserting a light comment here and there. I felt the king's gaze on me and turned, startled once again to realize he couldn't have been much older than myself. How had such a young king grown so devoid of feeling? Arcas had told me that Rasmus hadn't always been cruel.
"You are surprisingly lovely, Fireling," he said, voice pitched low, "despite your cuts and bruises."
His hand lifted as if to trace a bruise on my collarbone. I shifted backward quickly. "Cuts and bruises are nothing," I wanted to say. He had ordered his soldiers to raid my village. My mother had been murdered, and now I was forced to sit at the same table with her killer. After throwing me to a beast and then to a sadistic fighter who tried to break off my fingers, he was paying me compliments. My fear of him disappeared in a cloud of anger. A heat I wouldn't have thought possible in that cold space rose up in me and bent the air with waves. Droplets of water slid down the edge of the table. He skimmed a hand along the edge of the table, flicking bits of water to the floor, already frozen into tiny pellets.
"Calm yourself. I didn't bring you here to discuss your beauty."
I stared at him, so calm and cold and empty. "What possessed you to bring me here? I'd rather take my meals with your dogs." He seemed unperturbed by the insult.
"It's a tradition to celebrate my new champion."
"Even a Fireblood?"
"A Fireblood has never won before. You defeated a great warrior."
"How did you do it?" A rustle of fabric drew my attention to the other guests, who seemed to pick up on the question and lean closer. Morella's father, in particular, seemed full of tension, his grey eyes intent under thick white brows. My pulse pounded in my ears. I barely remember. It was all a blur. A small smile played at the edges of his lips.
"Then we will have to repeat the experience, and next time you will tell me how you won. I have great plans for you, Fireling."
"I believe your intention was to kill me, one way or another." Morella laughed.
"And to think we almost didn't get the chance to watch you in the arena.
Would have been a great loss, would it not, Raz?" Her familiar use of a nickname for King Rasmus caught my attention. The king's eyes remained on me.
"I'm not going to kill you. You're my champion now, and my guest."
A steward came forward with a decanter and poured wine into the king's goblet. A door opened and three men came in bearing platters piled high with ham, roast, fish, buttered potatoes, and vegetables in rich sauces. As the rest of the table tucked into their food, I sat with my hands on my lap.
"You will eat," the king said quietly.
I met his eyes. What would happen if I refused? He inclined his head as if he read my thoughts.
"I have already said I won't kill you, Ruby."
"Don't call me that. The name my mother gave me has no place on your lips." He smiled and took a sip of wine.
"I believe I know what belongs on my lips."
For the first time, a hint of heat entered his gaze. I looked away, my skin crawling with discomfort. I took a sip from the goblet to cover my confusion. He drummed his fingers on his goblet, making it ping.
"I know your dearest wish is to kill me."
My head snapped up.
"Yes,"
he said.
"It's quite obvious that you hate me. Fire and frost are natural enemies, and I know your history. What happened to your village? Your mother?"
He sat back in his chair.
"There aren't many Firebloods left. When one escapes from prison, it doesn't go unnoticed. Especially one found in an abbey that worships Fors, of all places."
"Who brought you there,
I wonder? I'm afraid your monks have been less than forthcoming."
"Where are they?" I demanded, pushing my chair back and standing. I imagined the monks in Black Creek prison,
the rats running over their feet as they slept, their old bones aching from the hard stone floor. The lilt of conversation around the table died abruptly. The king motioned to my seat.
"Sit, Filing. Your monks are unharmed. They are in their abbey, carrying on with life as usual."
I stared at him hard, blinking, wishing I could read the truth in those blank eyes. "I don't believe you." The continued silence drew my attention to the other guests. All eyes rested on me. Making an effort to compose myself, I took my seat again, and the conversation resumed.
"You think they're here, my keep?" he said softly. "Being tortured for information, perhaps? Search for yourself."
"You could be keeping them anywhere. Black Creek Prison isn't far from the abbey." The king sipped his wine, then calmly put his goblet on the table.
"It's good that you understand the danger to those who love, Filing."
I suddenly wished I'd never learned to care, that I was free from feeling, as if I'd been in the prison where all I had was hate.
"Tell me what happened in the arena," he said softly.
I stared hard at my lap, the white knuckles of my hands standing out against my dress. Any information I gave him could be used against me, could prevent me from destroying the throne. At my silence, the king exhaled and sat back in his chair.
"You see me as an enemy," he said. "But when I look at you, I don't see an enemy. I see potential."
I shook my head. Yet another person who wanted to use me, and this time the very person I wanted to destroy. He toyed with his goblet.
"Something happened to you in my arena, just before you struck the killing blow. Your eyes turned black."
A memory came to me. The storyteller in the woods. She said the Minnax seeped beneath your skin, turning your eyes and blood black, making you vicious and bloodthirsty, eager to do the Minnax's bidding in exchange for blissful darkness. I took a sip from my goblet, cursing the unsteadiness of my hand.
"You know something happened to you. One day you'll trust me enough to tell. But first, a gesture of good faith. I do something for you, and you do something for me."
"What will you do for me?" He paused, waiting for my full attention.
"I will give you a chance to face the captain who killed your mother. To kill him, if you wish."
I inhaled sharply. How could he say that with the man sitting only a few feet away? The captain who was under your command, following your orders. You would give him over to me.
"Yes."
"Why?" I felt a muscle twitch in my neck. "Why would you do that?"
"I told you, to show you that you can trust me, and that if you give me what I want, I'll continue to reward you in return. There is no reason we can't find ways to benefit each other."
I was off balance, confused, distracted. I had let my guard down. Sat and spoken with the king as if I were any willing guest and he my cordial host. Anger at myself and him erupted in my chest, needing an outlet. I whipped my hand down and sent a thin blaze of heat at the table. It sizzled for a second, and when it cooled, a dent was left behind. The crack ran down the center from the head of the table all the way to the end. In the thick silence that followed, I met his eyes, my chest heaving. He glared back with blazing darkness. If he expected me to sputter an apology, he would be disappointed. I was glad I had cracked his table. I wanted to break it in half. He lifted a hand. I braced myself for a blow, but he placed it on the table and shot a thin line of ice into the crack, sealing it instantly.
Then he grabbed my hand and placed it on the table so that my heat melted the surface. My skin tingled at the contact. I yanked away, and the king placed his own hand on the table again, refreezing the water. The surface was flat and perfect, as if nothing had happened.
"You see," said the king, "frost and fire can work together. Perhaps that's a lesson."
I stared at the table, at the crack that had been so easily obliterated. I wonder if I would be so easily erased when I outlived my usefulness.
"As you are not hungry, you may go, fireling."
Without a word, I stood and walked to the guards, ignoring all the eyes melded to my back. As the doors opened, the king spoke once more.
"You fight again in 3 days."
Chapter 22
"I must thank you for something," said Dorina in her quiet voice. "You killed my brother's killer." 3 days had passed, and it had seemed like an eternity. I spent all my time in my room, with only the occasional visit from Dorina to break the monotony. As it was the day of my match, she'd helped me put on the red tunic, freshly laundered and no longer smelling of sweat and blood. Somehow she'd also retrieved the mask I'd worn before. I wore a leather and steel gauntlet on my left hand to protect my healing finger. "What do you mean?" I asked. Her throat bobbed as she swallowed. "Gravnach killed my brother. He was only 14 years old, too young for the arena. But our family was so poor, and Lorca was determined to win prize money. He..." She put a hand over her mouth and closed her eyes before continuing. "He was the youngest in our family. My mother went mad with grief. I lost my brother and my mother to that monster, and now you've killed him. For that, I thank you." I was touched by her gratitude, though I didn't deserve it. I had only been trying to survive, but I understood her need for revenge more than I could say. She looked up at me with a pleading expression. "I don't normally talk about it, but I felt I must thank you. If you tell anyone that I've spoken against one of the champions, I'll be punished." "I would never tell, Dorina. And I'm glad if his death brings you peace. But I did nothing except what I had to do. I had no choice." When I was dressed, my hair loose down my back, she stood and looked at me with a fierce glint in her eye. "I will cheer for you, my lady, no matter what everyone else thinks." A few minutes later, guards led me through the courtyard. Heat came off my skin in nervous waves as I tried to block out the cries of, "Die, Fireblood, die!" I knew what to expect in the arena now, but whether I could survive again was completely uncertain, and the thing that had been inside my skin might come again. I was nervous, confused, almost frantic as I paced back and forth in the alcove, grateful that the other fighters avoided me, and I had the space to work out my nerves.
"Careful, Fireling," said Bracca, "or you'll burn yourself out before you can even enter the arena."
I stopped and turned to her. Thoughts of Dorina's brother filled my head. If a boy was allowed to fight once, it might happen again. I couldn't imagine anything worse than having to kill a child. "Did you ever have to fight an innocent?" I asked. "Someone who you knew had no business being in the ring. I'm guessing you were a champion once." She shook her head, the icicles in her hair clinking slightly.
"I fought many years ago, under King Akur. It was different then. Only seasoned warriors were sought."
She opened her mouth and closed it again, perhaps thinking better of some comment. I sensed by her open expression that, like Dorina, she didn't hate me for being a Fireblood.
"You are to have a sword today," she finally said,
handing me one in a leather sheath. I eyed the weapon with a sense of repulsion, knowing how the cold steel would feel in my hand, how far it was from my natural heat. I have little skill with the sword. She shrugged.
The king's choice.
I drew the blade, testing its weight. It was well balanced and a good size for me, not too heavy.
You're a champion this time, said Bracca. You greet the crowd with the others. It's tradition.
I followed the procession through the dim interior of the alcove, which must span the entire perimeter of the arena. In a few minutes, we were on the other side, where I had seen the procession come from the day before. Clustered around the opening were men with spears holding the reins of white horses, handlers wrestling with animals that pulled against their leashes, and fighters of all shapes and sizes, from ragged men and women in chains to warriors in shiny steel breastplates and helms. The white-haired announcer made his way through our ranks and swept into the arena, striding to center stage. Today, he wore embroidered cobalt robes lined with white fur, and his neck and fingers flashed with silver jewelry. He greeted the crowd much like he had the day before, reminding the people that they honored the king by cheering his champions and cursing his enemies. When he was finished speaking, spear-carrying warriors on horseback started the parade. The champions followed on foot, with me last. Behind us were the exotic animals and their sweating handlers. Dust swirled from under our feet and danced in the sunlight. I found the king's balcony, his white robes with gold trim glowing in the bright sun. His head swiveled, following my every step. In the periphery of my vision, I saw Mirella in a turquoise gown, but my eyes kept returning to the king. Every time, it was harder to tear my attention away.
"We have a singular treat for the good citizens of Fors," the announcer said. "A spectacle the likes of which you've never seen. Today our champions and challengers will be faced with an additional complication. Caesar, the rare and dangerous Fos Tiger, and Brooks, the great bull and ancient mascot of the northern tribes, will also fight. And they care not if they slash or gore a champion or a challenger."
He gestured to the animals with a wide smile. The tiger prowled back and forth, baring its teeth and snarling at the crowd. The bull snorted and pawed the ground, yanking against the yoke held by men on each side.
"One champion, one challenger," said the announcer, "and two beasts in every match. If the beasts survive, they both go on to the next match. But only one man or woman, or perhaps only an animal, will leave the arena alive."
The stands erupted in cheers and applause. The blood had drained from my face. I trembled and leaned against a wooden pillar in the alcove, waiting for the world to stop spinning. People were going to have their throats ripped out for the enjoyment of the crowd. I wanted to push the announcer out of the way and rage at them.
"But before we bring out our champions, the animals look a bit hungry, don't you think? Perhaps a couple of traitors will fill their bellies."
The crowd roared again. Two men in chains were pulled toward the arena. As they passed, I realized one looked familiar. "Clay," I breathed, hardly believing that it could be the butcher's son who had given me my first kiss and who had told the soldiers I was a Fireblood, ending my life as I knew it. It seemed like 100 years since I'd seen him, but it was definitely Clay. He had a distinctively crooked nose, which he'd broken in a fight. I remembered how my mother had admonished him for not coming to her for healing sooner, before the bone had started to set. I hesitated. I could let him walk into the arena and I'd never have to see him again. But he was from my village, and no matter what he'd done, he was here in this awful place, same as me. "Wait," I said to the guard who held his chain. "Please, I know him."
Nobody cares, Fire Filth. Get out the way.
Bracca turned from where she spoke to one of the fighters and put her hands on her hips, levelling the guard with her stare.
One of the king's champions made a request. You can spare a minute.
The guard returned her stare, but he was the first to look away.
Only a minute.
I nodded my thanks to Bracca and stepped up beside Clay. He gave me a harsh look, but then his eyes widened.
Ruby?
What happened? I asked flatly. You were so helpful turning my mother and me over, but now they're calling you a traitor. He shook his head, his eyes intense.
I didn't mean to betray you or your mother, before or after you summoned the soldiers.
I didn't, he said urgently. But once they were there, I had no choice. They threatened to kill us one by one if no one told them where the Fireblood lived. I don't know how they knew about you.
You knew about me.
It wasn't hard to figure out I'm a Fireblood when... after you touched me. And I didn't kill your brother. I tried to save him.
I know, but I didn't want to be branded a traitor. My family would have suffered, you know that. And I swear, they didn't come because of me.
And yet, here you are. What happened, Clay?
The guards started to pull Clay forward.
Listen, Ruby, Clay whispered, leaning toward me and dragging his feet against the guard. That day changed me. I couldn't forget what happened here. What I'd done. So I left the village and found other people who've had enough of the king's cruelty. They've been gathering support for the past year.
He turned and spat on the ground.
That's what I think of the Frost King who sits on the throne.
The guards swatted the back of Clay's head, making him stumble. My hand came to steady Clay's arm.
Enough talk, said the guard,
and Clay was pulled into the arena. So someone else had drawn the soldiers to the village. He'd revealed me only because he had no choice. As much as I didn't want to excuse him, I had to recognize that he'd been terrified, caught between swords and torches, protecting the people he loved. The handlers had backed into an alcove, a gate now between them and the animals so they'd be safe when they let go of the leashes. As the tiger pulled free, I noticed that Clay and the other prisoner still had their hands shackled. They'd have no chance at all. The tiger shook itself and snarled at the handler behind the gate before turning and pacing the arena. The other prisoner made a run for the alcove, but shiny spears pointed at him from that direction had him veering away. Clay just stood in the center of the arena, his eyes closed, mouth moving. It looked like he was praying. Something flickered into life in my chest. Anger. Bitterness, pain, all swirling together and pushing heat into my limbs. The tiger finished its prowling exploration of the edges of the arena and turned its attention to Clay. It approached slowly, sniffing the air and snarling before taking an experimental swipe with its paw. Its claws slashed Clay's already ragged pants, tearing a hole and opening a gash in his thigh. The smell of blood seemed to incense the animal. It slashed again and then lunged, its mouth open. Before I knew what I was doing, I was sprinting into the bright sun of the arena. Chapter 23 Clay swung at the tiger, hitting it with the chain between his wrists. As I ran toward him, jeers and curses merged into an unrelenting buzz. I pulled my sword from its scabbard and brought the tip down on the tiger's shoulder, cutting its side as it lunged again. It snarled and twisted away, baring its long, sharp teeth. I stood with my back to Clay, the sword held out.
"What are you doing?" he hissed from behind me.
"We come from the same place," I answered while the tiger paced back and forth. Its blue eyes blazing with fury. "That means I fight with you." Before he could reply, the announcer spoke from a balcony to my left.
So, the Fireblood can't wait to get into the fight. What do you say we make this interesting and throw in a challenger?
The crowd roared their approval, and a figure came running out of the alcove, his face covered by a helm. At the same time, the white bull was released, its yoke falling to the ground. Its curved back rose into the air, followed by a flick of its feet, and then it rushed at the prisoner who was trying to climb up the sheer ice at the edge of the arena. People in the stands laughed and threw rocks. Some hit the bull, incensing it further. The animal's sharp horns caught the prisoner in the back. He went down and stayed on the ground, unmoving. Then the bull turned toward the helm-clad figure and charged. The man stood, sword at the ready, and at the last second threw himself left, his sword pointed up and to the right, so the bull's momentum pulled it over the sword's tip. It bellowed in pain and rage and turned on him, muscles bunched for another run. The tiger still prowled. Every few seconds it advanced and retreated as it paced. I had to keep turning to shield Clay, lunging at it with my sword. Up close, I could count the animal's ribs. I felt a rush of pity for the poor, underfed beast, just another plaything in the king's toy box. I turned and saw that the bull was already on the ground, a sword raised above its head. I turned away as the warrior delivered the killing blow. The crowd cheered.
"You can't save me," said Clay. "Only one person will leave this arena alive."
I shook my head, mentally shoving his words away. The challenger wiped his bloodied sword on the bull's white fur and advanced towards me. I changed position, shoving Clay behind me so I could keep both the tiger and my opponent in my sights. When my sword was pointed at the warrior, the tiger took the advantage and rushed forward. With my left hand, I sent a blast of heat at the animal. It backed off. I laid a line of fire between us.
"Save some for me," said the challenger.
I recognized the voice even before he removed his steel helm. When his face emerged, a cheer erupted from the seats. "Captain Drake." I raised my sword, but he sheathed his own and showed his palms. I waited as he came forward and stopped a few feet away.
"You burned my soldiers and then led me on a merry dance across half the kingdom," he said. "Some of the men you scarred are in the stands today. They'll be cheering as I avenge their pain."
"You killed my mother," I said, heat pulsing through my fingers and into the steel. "Today I take your life for hers."
"You can try," he said,
raising his voice above the drone of the crowd. He made a few smooth movements with his sword, showing off his dexterity. Then he turned and bowed low to a woman leaning over the stands behind him and a girl who had the captain's eyes and the same shade of sandy hair. His wife and daughter, I thought, the girl he had bragged about at dinner with the king.
"Did you ever have to fight an innocent?" I had asked Bracca.
Well, the captain was no innocent. He had the blood of countless people on his hands. And yet, to kill him in front of his wife and daughter, I didn't want that. I'd been raised to value life, to preserve it. I couldn't put the captain's daughter through the pain of witnessing the death of her father. My desperate gaze found the king on his balcony, his gold-trimmed robes and hair making him shine like some kind of celestial vision. His eyes were dark and steady, his posture relaxed.
"I don't want this," I said clearly,
the words echoing in the expectant hush. The king's lips lifted on one side, his look of mocking disbelief cutting through me. "You do want this," his look said, his eyes somehow both caressing and triumphant. "You just don't want to admit it." Morella sat next to him. She leaned forward slightly, her hands gripping the arms of the seat, her violet eyes wide. She had to know this was wrong, but her face looked strange, a flash of something sharpening her delicate features. Anticipation? Excitement? The captain laughed.
Pleading with the king. Pathetic.